hey, this is Hannes from Storyworthy. I just want to thank you for listening to the show. And listen, the very best thing you can do for us, tell your friends. Send them a link. People are silly. Send them a link to storywiththepodcast.com or our iTunes page and say, hey, you should listen to this. That's all you have to do. That's all you have to do.
This is Margot Lightman, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Story Worthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the headquarters of Match.com in Dallas, Texas.
Is that where Match.com is?
That is their number one headquarters. They also have offices in West Hollywood, San Francisco, Tokyo, Rio de Janeiro, and Beijing.
Wow, no, I didn't.
And out of that list, we picked the least interesting one and flew here to Dallas on the Storyworthy Jet of Truth.
Well, here we are, folks, and we're here because Margot Lightman is here tonight, and she brings forth the topic, finding your match.
Finding your match,
finding
yes.
Your match.
Which is always tricky.
Well, it is tricky, but when you do, it really seems to...
Right.
And it
happens very...
seldom.
Quickly, I think people... Well, very seldom, but I mean, when it's right, it's right, and you know very quickly. You know, people are like, well, you got to get to know people. Mm-hmm. Like, if you got to get to know people if you're not necessarily supposed to be with them, and you're just, you know, but you want to be with somebody. You know, it's like, if you're talking to the right person, you know very quickly
right.
that you're talking to the right person.
You know what's funny is when I first moved to L.A., I dated this guy, and we were dating, but I was also very good friends with my next-door neighbor, Matt.
Yes.
And so Matt always came with Mike and I to... These are very basic names, so I can say these names, Mike and Matt.
I know. Fine. Couldn't hang out with a Jamal, could you, racist?
But okay. Matt always came along with us to the movies, to House of Pies, to the bookstore. I ran a marathon.
Right.
Matt was at one end. Mike was at the other. I mean, these were...
And eventually Matt shoved
was a
Mike
really
out.
Good friend. Well, no,
happened.
But what happened was Mike and I split up, and he says to me, I shit you not, he says... Why don't you just go be with your neighbor? That's obviously who you want to be with. And I thought you were right. And then we were married for 12 years.
Yeah.
But we had so much fun together, like in the car. And we, I think because he was from Ohio and I'm from Pittsburgh, very similar backgrounds. His father actually grew up on the same street my mother grew up on in Pittsburgh. So very... Very,
eventually,
very similar
you did
roots.
Turn out to be related, and that's why you had to get a divorce, because you turned out that
number
you
one, we're not
cousins.
Divorced. Number
you're not,
two,
whatever.
The point is,
the
we
point
were very
is,
similar.
Guys,
we just had
four,
so much
guys
fun
with
together.
Four letters in their name, and the first letter is M. You're a pushover for.
We just had a great time
Murray,
together.
No,
and I really think we were a match. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now what happened? I don't
time.
Know. I don't
yeah,
know.
12 years.
I
a
also
long time.
Wanted to address something. Mm-hmm. You were talking about Match.com. Here we are in Dallas at Match.com. Do you know? I understand. There's been a big backlash on online dating. Like it has, it's backfired. It's not working at all.
Well. Has it stopped? I always wonder if did it stop working or did people just decide to listen to the complaints? I think all this stuff work is exactly the same all the time. It's like, you know, if there's two shark attacks in a week, suddenly the waters of America are infested with sharks. It's like, no, there's seven shark attacks the whole year. It just so happened that they happened this week, so we're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
But if it happens every 6 months, nobody gives a shit.
But what does that have to do with online dating?
What I'm saying, whatever the complaints are, whatever horror stories people can tell about online dating, they could have told them, or they did tell them in the past, and nobody was listening.
I see.
Because the zeitgeist,
and you
heard
feel
me,
like you got to try it yourself.
Of America was, online dating is new and fun.
Yeah.
Let's listen to those stories.
Here's
and we're
what
just
I have
ignore.
Found. Yeah. Now, it didn't work. I was only on it for like a month, and it didn't work because I don't think I worked the program. Do you know what I mean? I didn't
gotta,
do what I was supposed to do.
You got to do all 12 steps.
Well, I have a child, and it's very hard to say to somebody, oh, sure, I'll give you, you know, my entire Friday evening or even coffee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's
when
why you need to get somebody else with a child.
You know, you're
so
on
you
the
can
clock.
Go on a date from 3 to 5.
Yeah.
And then you both go home, feed your kids, and go to sleep eating their macaroni and cheese.
Ugh, it's so
and you're like,
sad.
Man, the romance is fantastic.
Listen, you are not far from the mark. You're
no,
really not.
Exactly.
The point is that the online dating, let me just tell you what happens, is that what happens is men stay on the site forever. They just, they join OkCupid or whatever, and then they don't get off of it. They don't change the profile. It just stays there, and it gets stale. And then women, they go on and they realize that it's pretty much all creepy guys, so they get off. So women are kind of get on it and then they pull off. But the men, they just stay on. It's like they're sitting in wait, like fish, you know what I mean? Waiting to be fed, and then they're just going to jump at it.
Yeah, but that's what men are like. That's what's happening in real life is like, men are single men are always looking for dates, and single women will sometimes go, you know what, I'm taking 6 months off.
Yeah.
And I'm out. And they actually mean it. And men are never like, you know what, I'm going to, if even if there's a remote possibility of me getting laid, I'm going to ignore it for the next 6 months. That's never going to happen. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I guess. Well, so that's why I think that online dating isn't,
again,
it's not working.
All this technology stuff is simply different versions of everything that happened. First of all, Match.com is just the updated version of the singles ads that used to be in the back of magazines, or the LA Weekly, or Milwaukee Magazine.
Yeah, but
or
now
New
there's
York
pictures
magazine.
And there's more information.
I mean, no, but yeah, but
it's more discerning.
But it's essentially exactly the same thing. It's exactly the same. It's like, look, I'm not just gonna. I've decided to stop just wandering around, hoping I bump into someone who's remotely interested.
Yeah, hopefully somebody's gonna fall on the hood of my car.
Yeah,
you know, like,
right.
When's that going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I'm going to put out to there, I'm interested, here are my supposed interests. Women actually put their interests on there, and men put what they think women want to hear on there.
Yeah.
If everybody who loved to walk on a beach on Match.com walked on the beach, you wouldn't be able to get to the water. There'd just be millions of couples walking up and down the beach. Nobody fucking wants to walk on a beach unless you live in Malibu.
Yeah.
Nobody's like, you know, let's drive somewhere and then walk through something that's hard to walk through.
No, people do. Actually, I'll say something, Hannes. People do like to go walk on the beach. I mean,
they don't.
You don't, because you like to be inside with electricity and a table.
I really do enjoy tables.
I know you do. But the point is, we have a storyteller here tonight.
Hello, my friend.
Margot Lightman. You guys, she is such a treat. Hannes, I can't even tell you. I saw her at the LA Pod Fest, and I'll tell you something.
Yes.
I peed my pants a little bit.
Wow.
No, I did.
That sounds like something you should put on Match.com.
She...
Hey, have you ever peed your pants listening to a podcast?
Well, she just, you know,
if you
she
have,
reminds me
we
of...
could be a match.
She has so much going on. You know, she's a writer and an actress and a storyteller, and she makes it look so goddamn effortless. That's what's happening.
I know. Exactly. That's what all the best do.
The best do, right? They just
make
it
look
like
much more work than it even is. I'm sweating right now. I'm wearing a tank top. I got a headband on. It's very difficult.
Anyway, Margot is quite a talent. And you know who she reminds me of, Hannes? When you look at Margot, who does she remind you of?
Why is her name escaping
Goldie
me?
Hawn.
Grace Adler. Oh.
Goldie Hawn. She reminds
go
me
with
so
the,
much of her.
Wait, well, who is the woman who played Grace Adler? And Will and Grace.
Oh,
Deborah Messing.
That's
how
could
you remind
be.
Me of.
Yeah, blonde. A blonde Deborah Messing.
Probably Deborah Messing. I'm sure Deborah Messing could be blonde in a second if that were required.
Anyway, Margot has a new book out.
Hold on. Yes, I see that now.
Has a new book out called Gawky, and it's tales. It's like it's more than essays. It's a whole memoir of
according
her
to the
childhood.
Right here it says tales of an extra long awkward phase. That sounds. See, I can get into that because I still feel like I'm in an awkward phase.
Really?
Yeah, well,
you always seem comfortable in your skin. 63 years old,
63.
White man.
I'm 61. We're just saying this, so she's going, God, he looks good.
Yeah,
looks
well,
good.
That's the idea.
Yeah, that's
right
the
there.
Idea. I'm going to go with 70 from now on. No, I am more comfortable than I used to be. It's true because I used to pretend I didn't give a shit, but now I really don't give a shit. And it's really freeing to just not give a shit. A lot of people at my work, they're so childish. I mean, some of them are in their 20s, but everybody's like, oh, this person this and this person that. And I'm always looking at him like, what the fuck do you care? What the fuck do you care that this moron thinks something about you? Why do you care?
But isn't that sort of humorous for you, though, Hannes? Don't you sort of find like, well, that's kind of a perk of the job to be able to look upon these younger children and just know so much more? In a way.
No.
It's kind of fun.
You're like Bill Murray of my job.
Yeah. I mean, it is sort of a humorous look at the inside of what these kids are thinking.
Yeah. Apparently, by the way, I'm Snapchat famous within a small circle of people.
That sounds dirty.
They keep doing I'll be something like, hey, fuck you. And they'll be like, ooh, do that again. And then they record it and they put it on Snapchat for 6 seconds. And it's like 12 people who are like, this is awesome.
I got to follow that. Maria Spritolozzi, our sound girl, is dying.
Yes.
Are you a because see,
she
Maria
has Snapchat.
Is
she's a kid.
Young, right? She's under 20, maybe under 22. I don't know. The point is, she has pink hair. And she obviously
Care, she's sitting
Snapchat.
On a ball and next to a chair, a perfectly good chair that any American would be glad to sit in. But
Hannes
no,
is so jealous.
I'm going to dye my hair pink and sit on a ball.
Hannes is
desk.
So jealous of the youth. It's just hilarious.
I'm just jealous of the ability to sit on anything without a back.
Hey, listen, you guys, before we bring on our storyteller tonight, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, especially during the holiday season, you know,
yes,
when you know, you're feeling extra
if
warm.
If Jesus were around, he'd be donating to podcasts. That's what
StoryworthyPodcast.com.
Like
you head over there, you click on our Amazon ad and shop as normal. There's
yeah, exactly.
one way to
you're
support.
You're going to buy gifts for people anyhow.
Yeah.
So buy them on Amazon because they can return them and without you knowing about
follow
it.
Follow us on Twitter at Storyworthy.
Yeah, follow, yeah. Us
follow us on Twitter. And here's something you can do, folks. Tell a friend, tell a coworker, tell anybody you know about the Storyworthy podcast and tell them how easy it is to subscribe to Storyworthy yeah. on iTunes, listen on Stitcher, SoundCloud,
yeah, that's
et cetera.
Just go to iTunes and subscribe,
et cetera. That's what we, all right, we you guys. Wherever you are, stick around because the hilarious Margot Lightman is on her way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have author and psychologist Sophie Venable.
And I'll be talking about a moderately fun 50-mile bike ride.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hey, this is Kevin Allison of the Risk Podcast, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
We're back. We have left the Dallas offices of Match.com, and we have settled in the West Hollywood offices. Where they really have a much more broad definition of match.
Yeah, it's a different group
Dallas.
Altogether.
Dallas is all like, you know, farmers trying to get together and West Hollywood, it's all guys dressed like farmers.
You know,
Hannes,
I have to tell you, I think part of the reason why the online dating is backfiring, it's because dating in general, and this is a huge topic, so I'm just going to touch upon, but I think that dating in general, people are realizing that, like, you don't necessarily need another person to get through life anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like the hunter and the gatherer anymore. Women are working. Men are taking care of children. People are working together.
And dogs having, and cats living together.
And having,
mass hysteria.
No, having independent lives.
Yes,
actually,
exactly.
Just the opposite of that. And so sometimes I think, but see, I don't have this life, so this is my fantasy life, that like when my daughter would leave, then I'd have like a man over for the weekend, and it would just be like, woo, you know.
I believe that site is called OurTime.com.
That's
I've seen
not
the commercials.
But my,
59-year-old people who are like, you know, now the kids are out of the house and we can bone. That's not what they
actually
say.
No, but listen, like Louis C.K. does a bit
playing.
On it. Louis C.K. does a bit on it,
yeah.
You know, how now he's living the best of both worlds because he has his child half the time.
He's a great dad because he only has to be a dad half a week.
That's what I'm talking about. So yes. I think that that might be a part of the reason why online dating isn't working. And it's also part of my jealousy that I don't have that, so...
Yeah, see, maybe you're in a mindset where you're like, since it didn't work for you, you're like, yeah, all these people are saying it didn't work. Now, if you meet somebody on Match, you know, accidentally
right.
from your old, somehow your thing goes back up, then you'll be like, you know what really works online dating? Fantastic. I met
somehow
the love
my
of
thing
my
goes
life.
Back
Jamal.
Up.
I'm sorry, no. Wait, Mike?
Oh, my
Mick.
Gosh.
Mick. You only haven't slept with guys named Mick with four-letter M names.
I wouldn't speak so fast, honest. All right, you guys, Margot Lightman is here right now. She is an actress and a writer. You've seen her on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, Jimmy Kimmel Live, VH1's Best Week Ever, AMC, Comedy Central. You know, Hannes, if I went through all the letters, we would just say, just everything in the TV guide. Do they still have a TV guide?
Yes, I believe they still do. Although they stopped, you know, when they stopped publishing it, and remember the Tiny Digest when we were kids?
Yeah.
Now it's a regular magazine size.
Wait, because Reader's Digest?
Is now published in a regular size.
You're breaking my balls.
I think
is that
that's
true?
Because everyone who reads Reader's Digest is 95 years old and can't read the tiny print anymore.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm absolutely serious.
Wow, that's exciting.
But you're saying, wait, what she did or who you slept with? I got confused about the
letters. Margot Lightman is here right now. She teaches storytelling, so I'm anxious
Ooh.
To hear some of the tips that she might have. And she
wow,
has a new...
I bet she's got a red pen out already. This is not a good sign
she
for
She has a new book out called Gawky, like I said, and now she has another new book coming out from Sasquatch Books in 2015. It's going to be called Long Story Short, coming out in the fall. So
Wait a minute. The name of the publisher is Sasquatch Books, and the books are Gawky and Long Story Short. Is it all about height?
No
the
way.
The entire publisher, they only publish books about height.
I see a pattern.
Yes.
And now Nagaki is actually published from Seal Press, so it's a different publisher. But how exciting that she's a published author. I'm very excited for her.
Now, kids, books are these things that are made on paper that you hold up. It's like a Kindle.
You can find Margot over at margolightman.com and also follow her on Twitter at Margot Lightman. So, folks, wherever you are, please put your hands together for Margot Lightman.
Okay, so hi. So I used to live in New York City before I lived here in L.A., and I lived there for 11 years. And towards the end of my stay there in New York City, I kind of got priced out of the city. And I was finding ways to scheme so I could afford to live there, things, ways I could cut corners. And I had this awakening one time when I was at the movie theater, and I went to buy tickets from the machine. And I pushed the button. I accidentally pushed the senior citizen discount button. And the tickets were normally at the time like $13 to see a movie, and they were only $9 at the senior citizen rate. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to return these. I'm just going to go in and see what happens. So I go in, and nobody noticed or seemed to care. And I was probably like 28, and nobody noticed. So I thought, well, this is what I'm going to do every time now because nobody cares. And I did. And I kept doing it. And then eventually I met this guy, and I told him, and we started dating, and I told him about my scheme with the tickets. And so he goes, yeah, I'll go in on that with you. And then after we do that, do you want to sneak into a second movie? And I thought, yeah, let's do it. And so we did it, and we got away with it. So naturally we got married because it was just the perfect match for me. And so we get married, and we just keep doing this scheme of going, paying senior citizens rate and going to second movies, and also sometimes popping our own popcorn and bringing it in. And so one time we go into the movies and we see two movies, but what happened is there was this movie theater on the Upper West Side where we lived that had a upstairs and a downstairs. And downstairs, nobody was paying attention. And often the ticket ripper was the popcorn popper. And so when we walk in, the ticket ripper was popping popcorn. And so she wasn't paying attention. So she just said, go right in. So we go see one movie and then a second movie, and we leave with unripped tickets. And I have this awakening like, hey, do you think we could come back another day with these unripped tickets? So my husband and I come up with this whole monologue that I'm going to say when we get into theater. So we go back the next night, and I say, I'm so sorry we came last night with my parents, who are senior citizens, and they at the last minute canceled after we had bought them these tickets. And so now I have these tickets, and I'm wondering, can we use these to see another movie? And the manager said, yes. So then we went into a second movie, which was the remake of Friday the 13th. And then we went into a fourth movie, which is this horribly wonderful movie called Orphan. And I'll tell you about that in a second. But my point is, we saw four movies for this $9 ticket. And it was just one of the greatest 48-hour sprees I've ever had in New York City in my life. Mm-hmm. So we see the second movie called Orphan. And I have to just summarize what this movie was about, because if you haven't seen it, you should really see it. But it was just a riveting tale. And it stars that lady, I don't know how to say her name. It's like Vera Famiglia, and Peter Sarsgaard. So it has like a good cast. You'd think it'd be a great movie. And it starts, and Vera Famiglia, she is a mother who's a recovering alcoholic. And it's very tragic because the reason she had to get sober is many, many years ago, she accidentally drowned her child in the frozen lake behind the house in a drunken stupor. And so this has been a really tragic thing. Their family's really sad. And so years later, she's sober and she wants to adopt another child, but no one will let her adopt a baby because she drowned her first one in the lake. So they go and they're trying to adopt an older child from an orphanage. And they go to this, like, nun orphanage place, and there's all these older children, maybe, like, first or second grade, and they kind of take a shine to this girl, Esther, but yet there's something very strange about Esther. And so they adopt her, and there's a lot of red flags about Esther. Like, first of all, when they adopt her, she's wearing that velvet ribbon around her neck at all times, which is just you can't adopt a kid with that velvet ribbon. I mean, every movie, that is a telltale that something is wrong. So she's got this velvet ribbon, and then Esther starts acting very, very strange. Like they also have another child that didn't die in the lake, and that child is deaf. And she's like pushing around the deaf child, and then she keeps drawing these violent fires in buildings as her art projects, and then she keeps pushing everybody around that she knows. And the weird thing is, she's trying to fuck the husband, okay? And she keeps trying to do this. And so slowly it unfolds that Esther, the orphan, is not really a 7-year-old girl at all. No, she is this 32-year-old woman that has this bizarre disease that makes her look like a child, but she's a child in a woman's body, but she's actually 32 and she just doesn't age. So she's a grown woman, actually, which explains why she's trying to have sex with the husband, because she's 32 and she has needs. And then everything starts to make sense. So at the end of the movie, she's this evil 32-year-old in a child's body that the Vera Farmiga ends up drowning Esther, the orphan, on purpose in the end of the movie in the lake. And we all want her to drown this kid. And it is really a perfect ending to a perfect movie. And my husband and I enjoyed it more than any of the 75 other movies we'd snuck into in our marriage. And we're having a great time. And then this is right around our first wedding anniversary. Let me go see this movie. And I don't want to brag, but what we were doing for our first wedding anniversary was we were going on a carnival cruise to Canada. And so we are boarding this cruise ship. And I have to say, I've been on a few cruises in my life. And what I want to say about a cruise ship is you have to let everything go. You can't judge people. You can't get on that cruise ship and start thinking like, oh, I look at these people and I understand how George W. Bush got elected twice. You can't have that thought. You can't look at everybody and go, this is how the obesity epidemic in America began. You can't. You have to go into the cruise ship. You got to let it all go. You have to hit the chocolate buffet. You have to enter the belly flop contest. And you have to have a good time. Let it go. So I let it go and I get on the cruise ship and my husband and I get on and we eat a great meal. We have a few drinks. We have sex. We go down a water slide. The boat hadn't even taken off. Okay. So then everything's going great and it's getting time to go to dinner. And at dinner you go, the problem with cruise ships is the dinner time that you have to sit with at this table that you're assigned, which is like people they think you'll get along with. And so my husband hands me this pot cookie right before we go to sit down at this dinner with these strangers on a carnival cruise ship. They're sort of taking this cruise unironically. And so we go and we sit down and there's two other couples there and we're waiting for the fourth couple. We're making small talk, and this one couple is talking to us about the husband just keeps comparing everything that comes out to his favorite restaurant, the Outback Steakhouse, and he just keeps saying, you know, this is a good appetizer, but if you had the appetizers at Outback, and they're being really serious about this. And then the other couple next to me, we call the Ted Bundy couple, like the husband's really preppy, and he's wearing this like jacket with those things on the elbows, and like he looks like a serial killer. And his wife just like keeps applying red lipstick and like pushing food away and talking about how she doesn't want to eat too many calories. And so I'm sitting with these people, and finally the fourth couple arrives, and it's a guy and his girlfriend, but she's not just a girlfriend. She's his girlfriend, but I'm just going to be honest. She has the orphan disease. Okay. Like she is a girl in a woman's body wearing like a small size child sized dress, but she has the face of a woman and she's sitting there and she has the actual orphan disease. And I look across from my husband and right in this moment, the pot cookie kicks in and I'm like, oh no. And my husband taps me on the shoulder and he says to me, hey, Margo, refresh my memory. What's the last movie we saw in the theaters? I just said, we are not doing this right now. Because I forgot to mention that after the movie, I researched Orphan and found out that it was a real disease. There is a real disease that you can look like a child, but not ever grow into it. I mean, it's different than like the Webster thing. It's like you really, really look like a child, but you age. Okay, so this is a real thing and it's really rare. So I'm sitting there and now I'm stoned on this pot cookie and the orphan is across from me and I can't, I'm a very tolerant person, but I can't handle it. And so I'm sitting there and the boyfriend is normal and he's talking to all of us, but then orphan will only communicate by whispering in her boyfriend's ear and then he'll speak for her. So everything's very insane. And then meanwhile, this guy's kind of deter everything by talking about the Outback Steakhouse. And it's very bizarre, the whole situation. So the waiter comes over to take our order for the entrees. And the boyfriend of Orphan, he goes, yeah, I'll have the steak. And then you hear, I like could hear Orphan whisper in his ear. And she goes, broccoli. And it's like horrifying. Okay? And so I just can't handle it. And it's getting crazier and crazier. And I'm trying to make conversation with the other couple and the Ted Bundy couple. She just keeps pushing food away and giving me diet tips. And the Outback guy just keeps comparing everything to Outback. And the next thing I know, the maitre d' of the cruise ship restaurant comes over. He's this really happy-go-lucky guy, and he puts his hands on the boyfriend of Orphan's shoulder, and he goes, and he's standing behind her. He goes, "Is everybody having a good time tonight?" And we all go, "Yes, yes." And he's behind the Orphan guy, and he goes, "Oh, sir, I see you brought your daughter." And then Orphan turned around and looked him right in the eye, and then the maitre d' goes, "Okay." He just backs off and walks away in this like crazy backwards walk. And my husband and I excused ourselves. Like, because we couldn't keep it together. And we excused ourselves and we left and we laughed so hard. And then we went to the front desk and we asked if there's any way we could get our table changed because we couldn't do like four more meals with Orphan. We wouldn't be able to keep it together. And so we go to the desk and we say that we have to switch tables to just, if there's possible, just a solo table because we made up the excuse that we had religious differences. We're schemers. What can you say? And then the next night we sat alone at a table and we toasted to our 1-year anniversary with the alcohol we had smuggled into the cruise ship in Listerine bottles.
Actually, very common, I understand.
The Listerine?
Yeah, to smuggle in alcohol on a boat.
Yeah, you do it in Listerine or shampoo.
Right. Now, my sisters and my mom, they all went on a cruise together. That sounded so Pittsburgh, didn't it? My sisters and
my mom. They yins went on a cruise together.
Yeah, boy, that came out. My Pittsburgh came out. Anyway, they went on a cruise, and two of my sisters, I guess after they got on the boat and they had all tried to sneak in their alcohol, two of my sisters got called to the luggage room, like over the PA system.
Really?
You know, and they both got, and they met at the elevator, and then they're going, and they're like, "What are you doing here?" And they're like, "I was called down to the luggage room," and I was called down to the luggage room, and they both got busted.
What happens if you get busted?
They confiscate the alcohol, but they kind of put a Listerine bottle in front of your face and say, "What is it?"
Wait. How do they have the right to look into your bag?
They do, because you could be smuggling weapons. You could be smuggling
alcohol, Jack Daniels.
What if first of all, Listerine is alcohol. Let's face facts. It's just the worst tasting alcohol in the world. What if you just lied right to him? See, this would be me. If I bothered to do this, and I would never do it because I don't drink, but it'd be like, "What is this? It's Listerine." No, what is in this bottle? It's Listerine.
Mm.
So what, how is your, this what, just what, making what a fuck? Poker face? That isn't intimidating
at
all.
Your sisters didn't do it right.
They can't.
Well, apparently they can.
What are they going to do? Unless they, and if he said, "Well, I'm going to have some," then you go, "Okay."
Enjoy.
It burns. Yes, it's Listerine.
But you're coming up with this entire scenario.
What you do is, your sisters didn't take the right precautions.
They probably put
vodka in a Listerine. But what you have to do is you put a dark rum in the original flavored Listerine, because then it looks the same.
Oh.
And then you put vodka in a minty flavored one, and you color and you dye it green.
Wait a minute.
And
you didn't color it. Yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah, if they're just throwing, I think they're throwing willy-nilly. They're putting whiskey in a mint flavored Listerine bottle. It's going to be
they have no idea what they're doing.
They're not professional alcoholics.
No, I mean, months before you go on the cruise, you got to save those bottles.
Yeah, so this is the whole buildup. It's completely premeditated.
You don't put it in shampoo because it's really hard to get the taste of shampoo out of a bottle.
Oh, gosh.
So if you have a little taste of Listerine in your booze, it doesn't really matter because it's alcohol anyway.
How much money do you think one can save? I mean, realistically.
Hundreds of dollars.
But let's just say for $200, I can drink all week for two.
They charge you per drink.
So how much is a drink on a cruise ship? Seriously.
I think I don't know. It depends on what you get. Let's say $8 plus they do an automatic gratuity in taxes. So say 10.
An airport or a theme park where you're isolated from the rest of the world, like the normal rules go out the window.
Yeah.
Everything's like twice as much. Yeah.
But I guess I think to myself, if I were to go on a cruise ship, I would think to myself, okay, I'm going to have, like 3 drinks a night, 7. No, I'm going to have 3 drinks a night. I'm going to budget $50 a day for alcohol.
No, it's going to be more.
It's going to be
That's
more.
Not going to be 5
Budgets
drinks.
Don't hold up under drinks.
I see.
By the third drink, your budget goes out the window.
They shove them in your face. You get on it and they come around with a tray. Do you want the special looking at the Statue of Liberty cocktail? Okay. Do you want the special send-off cocktail? Okay. And they just keep asking you. out. And you don't pay with money. What? You have a cruise ship card that's your ID card that it all goes on. So there's nothing. It doesn't look like a credit card or money.
Right.
So
this they're obsessed with it can control. Meanwhile, you know, the monkey shit and Ebola and everything is just things are running rampant throughout the cruise
it's
ship.
It's almost like you have a little chip in your head and they just kind of wave a wand at you now. Yeah. Oh, by the way, what kind of a cruise ship goes up to Canada? What are the sights?
It was not many sights. We went to see...
You went up the Pacific coast of Canada?
We went from New York City to Canada.
Okay. You went up that way.
So what do you
see? St. John, I think we went to, in like Newfoundland? Maybe.
Yeah. So this is just an excuse to drink on a boat because
it's like it's a vacation.
Well, I mean, you're basically, hey, I'm going to get on a boat and go to Maine.
What month were you? What month was this?
September.
Okay, so it was a nice warm time.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's funny because we have these reoccurring themes that we don't try to have. One of them turns out to be cruise ships, right? We've had several cruise ship stories. Also, pot cookies.
Yeah. Really?
Frequently making an appearance.
Cookies or brownies?
No, cookies.
Interesting.
It's interesting. Yeah, Todd Glass, he drugged his mother-in-law, so there was that.
Accidentally.
I don't know if it was his mother-in-law, but his partner's mother.
His partner's mother is from France and all cool and everything and has the gay son. And then she accidentally ate like 10 cookies at the thing. And then it started to freak. So you have this French elderly woman freaking out.
Yeah, 10 is
not one I would get on board with because I do enjoy marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself that I couldn't do a cruise because you can't smoke.
Yeah, but that's why you bring it in a cookie.
You bring it in a cookie. I know, but there's so much of a different thing to me. Like, the buzz is so much different, and it's not
as
social. Is there any way to smoke pot on a boat?
I'm sure people do.
You think?
I think the crew...
I don't
dealing
know.
With
you have to bring it in. I guess if you bring it in your pocket or your underwear and you just walk through, because you're just walking through like a metal detector. It's not security like there's security in an airport to get on a cruise ship. That's why they do go through the bags. So it's not that big security.
Yeah, they should have more metal detectors.
But I wonder if there would in fact be, you know, sprinklers that go off or fire alarms. I mean, smoke. You can't smoking on a boat, right?
You can't smoke on a boat?
I
think you probably could outside on the deck.
I'm sure there's an area. These are Americans. Americans are need to smoke.
I think you could smoke pot. I think because you can get a room with a balcony and you can do whatever you want on that balcony.
Oh, wow.
It's outside.
Did you guys have a balcony?
Yeah.
What did you do on a balcony?
Oh, it's so fun.
Tell me.
They had sex while you dressed up as a small child.
No.
I'm sorry, your husband dressed as a small
child.
With a
ribbon around your neck.
Yeah, and he grabbed the ribbon.
Not on a balcony.
Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy?
Because there's rooms right next to you, so you wouldn't have sex on a balcony because you can hear the people on the balcony right next to you.
Do you ever talk to those people, or
but they can hear your conversation.
So did you ever see the orphan on the boat again?
Yeah.
After that dinner?
Yes.
And did you wave or nod?
No.
No acknowledgement?
No. It's over. I severed.
You broke it
I
off.
And I'm not trying to be intolerant. Yeah. It was too much with the cookie, and I was so obsessed with this disease after I saw the movie.
Yeah,
but the fact that I was faced with
I looked it up here. It is there is a disease where you appear physically to be a child, but you're
old. Very rare.
Wait, this
it's
isn't like the progeria thing.
What's that?
The
Webster
old man looks like a little boy will be born, and in 7 years he's 95.
That's aging too quickly. Not aging at all. This is. You're aging physically. That's aging physically ahead of your actual age. This is aging, not aging physically.
So what did you find out, Hannes?
She had a boyfriend, you know? Like, she seemed okay.
Yeah, but was it a boyfriend or was it a father figure?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, look.
I assumed it was
whatever,
a boyfriend.
Hey, you know what my grandma used to say? There's a lid for every pot.
Is that right?
This guy wanted to be married to a child. He found a grown woman who looked like a child. She wanted to be married to a grown woman. Man, who are you to judge?
No. My dad used to say, even a dumb squirrel finds a nut now and then.
Yeah. I kept thinking about the whole cruise ship. I thought about their sex life.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Because you're having sex with a child.
Oh, my God.
Okay. But at the same time, she should be allowed to have sex, you know?
Right. But so she wasn't like Esther, who was actually a 32-year-old grown woman.
She was probably 32.
In that movie, Orphan, I have to tell you, that is one of the funniest, craziest movies I've ever seen.
It's great.
And I have an older sister who tells the story, you know, in the same way that you tell it with this. It's just so exasperatingly crazy, the whole plot. Like, you just think about who.
But wasn't she also like an insane prostitute?
Orphan? No.
Orphan. But the point is.
But there was a real life orphan that was like that. And she would wear overalls a lot and then get adopted. I found her on Wikipedia.
Wait a minute. Really?
Yeah.
Is it current?
No, she's in jail, but I mean, it's
No, but was it like something that would have been covered on 2020 or Primetime Live or whatever?
Yeah.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah, it's not like an ancient story from Jack the Ripper times. No.
It's by recent. The way, I just have to, I made a couple of notes of things. First of all, I just have to say, Outback Steakhouse, Sherry and I, my fiance, we were at the Outback Steakhouse yesterday.
Really?
Now, I am not a fan of the Outback Steakhouse because, first of all, I hate it when they're like, oh, you know what's famous? Australian steak. No, you just fucking made that up. That's completely false. Second of all, it's just a corporate. We went there because it was like happy hour, and it's like, oh, $4 coconut shrimp. Okay, we're at it. But it's like, yeah, nothing there is spectacular. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I was going to say is if this story took place in Los Angeles in a restaurant and not on a cruise ship, the woman would have mentioned the movie Orphan, and she would have went, I had a callback for that. Fucking bitch beat me out. That's exactly what would have happened, because she would have been like one of five people
that
could possibly be the part. And she's like, I was that close.
Now, when they put you at a table on a cruise ship, how do they know who you would be compatible with?
I think it went by age.
Is that right?
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying is, I mean, I was 30 when I got married, and this was, within our one-year anniversary, so I was around 30. And so that's why I'm saying that I think that she was around the actual age of the orphan.
Have your have you and your husband laughed so much since? Do you guys still laugh a lot?
Yes, but we laugh a lot about this a lot. I mean, if I tell this story in the show, he will try and come because
that's so sweet.
Just laughs so hard at this situation.
It is. It's
I mean, we've had a lot of funny things happen, but that is one of our funniest. Yeah.
You know, we were talking about dating and stuff. You know, they say that one of the key elements to keeping your marriage together is to laugh.
Yeah.
That once the laughter goes, then we get a problem.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So this is so exciting that you guys still
there's this thing,
are laughing.
I mean, so when we lived in New York City, I mean, I struggled a lot when I lived in New York City. And then we eventually, when we got married, moved to the Upper West Side. Not because we were rich, but because we found a cheap rental there through a family member. But I was so excited to live in this nice neighborhood. And then there was this homeless woman named Diane that would shit on the street in front of the Rite Aid. And she had some sort of deal that she was allowed. And I was just like,
she wasn't allowed.
She had a deal where she was allowed. And that's why, that's all you need to know about New York City. If you're listening to this and you've never been to New York City, that's all you need. Diane had a deal. Anybody else but Diane? No. Diane, okay.
So, and I knew her name was Diane. I don't know how I knew her name was Diane.
Yeah, you also knew her name, which is
I don't know why, but I did know her name, Diane. And I, like, got really angry because I was like, I've lived here at the time, I don't know, 9 years. It's eight, 9 years, and I've worked really hard to be able to live in this area, and I've got a woman leaving human shit out, you know, right by my place. I can't do this. And so I made these complaints to 311. Eventually, they got her to stop shitting on the street, and she had a second deal with Rite Aid that she was now allowed to shit in the Rite Aid bathroom. And I felt like I'd really, like, you know, like Norma Rae, I'd really taken charge of this. So now we live in a rental in Los Feliz in Los Angeles. And, you know, it's not the fancy, it's a lovely neighborhood. Yeah. We don't live in the fanciest apartment building, but we live in a really lovely neighborhood and we really like it. And these new people moved into the front unit and they have two dogs. And it's like a girl, a roommate, and the girl's boyfriend. The boyfriend's kind of like, I mean, I got to be honest, like a Eminem / he looks like Jesse Pinkman on Breaking Bad, but his friends.
Oh, do you know?
Not him, but his friends.
Yeah.
Okay, he's like that. And they have these two dogs, and they walk the dogs, and then they bag the dog shit in clear bags, big dogs, okay? And then they throw the clear, open bags of dog shit outside our building and don't bring it to the garbage can. Yeah. So I said to my husband, I go, I feel like this Diane again.
Yeah.
I'm like, here we are. And now it's not human shit, but it's bags, clear bags of dog shit. So the other day, I said, I'm done. We're leaving. We're going to do a note. And I've never left a note, but my husband wrote the note because my handwriting is too, recognizable. And so,
get out of here.
So he wrote the note and I, in broad daylight, walked up and taped it right next to the pile of clear, like,
poo. And it
poo.
said,
please dispose of your shit. Thanks.
Yeah.
And for the rest of the day, we laughed so hard about this because we just couldn't stop thinking about the mindset of a human being that would just keep hurling clear back.
It's
we couldn't stop laughing about, like, where are you in your life?
Right.
I don't know how to think.
When this, is that okay?
When, because I was like, I can't reason with this person, because a person that's going to leave a pile of clear bags of dog shit, when there is a garbage can 200 feet away, that
I
you
think
can't.
Irresponsible dog owners is probably one of my biggest pet peeves living in the city. Because right. you're so close with all these other people.
Yeah.
You know, every, right. you know, with, for my apartment, if I were to lean out my window and scream, I'm not kidding you, I would say 600 people would hear me. I mean, there's a lot of people yeah. where I live.
Yeah.
And out of that 600, I bet 200 of them have dogs because they think yeah. it's cute.
Yeah.
And they're in the city, and so there's just this whole thing about dog shit. It's kind of everywhere.
By the way, I think that you could really, if you just scream, listen to Storyworthy or subscribe to Storyworthy, if we get 25 hits out of that, I think that's good. So why don't you do that?
I don't do that.
Yeah.
What were you going to say? I'm sorry about the poop. Yes.
I don't remember. I'm just saying that we do laugh, and for some reason that became like the funniest. The thought of like this guy carrying these bags and just going, you know, and I'm not going to go to the garbage yeah. can.
But you know,
I'm
going to throw it. It just made us laugh mind, all day. I guarantee you, he thinks he's doing because he
just
didn't
leave the
just
dog
he
shit.
Didn't leave the shit.
You're very fortunate.
See, he
I'm
picked
so
it up,
you.
And it got as far as it's in a bag, and I'm going to put it on the side of the road. Somehow, not making it
pile.
To the point where we'll get it in the trash can. So it's like, if you talk to him, he'd go, no, I picked it up. He'd be like, yeah, you picked it up from over there and put it over here. You didn't, but in his mind,
he's
somehow
doing
he's
the right
created
thing.
A
I'm
version where this
yeah.
is the right thing
but
to do.
To me, that is so funny that someone is in that mindset. That yeah. makes me laugh.
And I love that
so
your
much.
Husband sees it the same way.
I just think it's funny. And like, we left this note, and all day we were like waiting, like, when is he going to
yeah,
come home and
see it?
And then
you sat like you were in an episode of How I Met Your Mother and just sat with binoculars at the
basically,
window going, where
and
are
I missed
where
it because I had a show that night and somehow he came home in between
and
missed I
missed it.
It.
Yeah, that's like my ex-husband and I used to put out, like if we would put out a piece of furniture on the curb we didn't want anymore
yeah.
or put out a lamp that we didn't want, we would just play this game, watch how fast somebody takes it.
Yeah.
You know, and you could watch it and within 15, 25 minutes somebody has come and taken that lamp.
I love stuff like that.
I know. That's the city living. I like that too.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, you do teach storytelling.
Yeah.
And but then you're also an author. And so yeah. I think that there's a difference between performing storytelling,
yeah.
right, and writing story
yeah.
writing. But is there or isn't there? There
yeah,
there is.
No, there is. It's
and
a
so
major difference.
Tell me that difference.
Because you can't when you write it, you have to write exactly how you feel and exactly how those words are going to be said.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas right now if I were to tell a story and I was going to say he walked in the room and he was wearing khakis and a polo shirt, you know I'm not attracted to that. But if I write it down and I go, he walked in the room and he's wearing khakis and a polo shirt, and to me that's not really my type. I'm more into a more of a rocker type. Like I have to explain
wow.
myself, whereas on stage I can just say it in a tone. So that was really hard for me because I thought when I got the first book deal that I would just print out. I was like, I'll just print out all the stories I've ever told,
sure,
and staple it together.
Well, no, I kind of feel yeah. like that. No, I absolutely kind of feel like that because I have a book, Pit to LAX,
yeah.
About from my childhood to when I got to Los Angeles, mm-hmm. Pittsburgh to Los Angeles, and I used to be a flight attendant. So there's a lot of those
yeah.
stories in there, and it is kind of like that. It's like 15 essays back to back, but
yeah.
that doesn't necessarily make a front-to-back story.
Right, yeah, the difference between, yeah, you say he was wearing khakis, and you write down he was wearing old man khakis.
Right.
Then we realize you don't like the khakis.
And I had to go through all of my, because a lot of these, this book deal came from a lot of my live work, and so I had to go through all of these stories that I already written, and I mean, I'm talking, it added like 5 pages to a story to
this
have
is,
to
that
write
reminded
like
me of listening to Adam Carolla talk about having to, you know, read the audio version of his book,
mm-hmm.
and how they would, you know, he would want to go off on a tangent because he's a radio performer,
no,
and they're like, no, we want you to read the exact. But I don't really like audiobooks because, again, just like you said, there are things that are meant to be read, and there mm-hmm. are sentences that are meant to be spoken.
Yeah, I
and
agree.
It's like it's hard for me. It used to be hard for me to read a play. Like they make it just because Sherry's been tutoring people, and it's like. You want the kid, you know, yeah, these kids, they have to read Shakespeare. Shakespeare should be seen.
Hmm.
Like, you take a 14-year-old kid to see, I just saw a production of The Tempest at South Coast Repertory, awesome. You take a kid to see that, he'll probably go, that was all awesome.
Yeah.
You make a kid read The Tempest with 30 other kids and everybody's reading a paragraph, that's not how it was meant to be heard. It's horrifying. So I think the idea of simply recording someone reading, even if it's the original author, reading the exact words he wrote in a book out loud, the jokes aren't the same. The rhythm's not
the
same.
Well, Mark Maron, in his book, Attempting Normal, he talked about how he wishes that he had done the audiobook first, which is kind of my thinking and what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because he says, in the audiobook, I'm sitting there reading it, think that I would change this. I would say
Oh, God, it was horrible when I did my audiobook.
I would think I'd say this differently. Right. So he says, I wish I'd done that first and then transcribed what I say in the audiobook onto paper.
When I did my – well, I have a lot to say about my audiobook recording. Yeah. But when I did it, I had that same thing. And I was like – at every break that we would take, I'd be emailing the publisher being like, can we change it? And they were like, no, it is in print. Like, you're done. And I was like, ah. But – for me, for my audiobook, I just want to say that I had to audition to be the narrator of my own life story.
Oh, wow.
And I had to, and they said to me that, and they were like, we're holding auditions for this. And I was like, well, can I get in for my audiobook audition? And they're like, yes. And then I thought about how many auditions I've had in my life that I don't book almost. Most things I don't book.
Sure.
You know, yeah, like, everybody doesn't book 90%.
Yeah. And I was like, if I don't get this, the audiobook recording of my own life written by me. If I don't get that, this is the lowest point of my life.
It's really low.
But I got it. I got the part. And they, like, I did the audition over the phone, and they were kind of like, oh, yeah, you're really nailing it. I was like, because it's my life. It's my life.
This is my fucking story. What are you talking about?
What was the breakdown to you? Was it like a Margo Lightman
type? I know. It was just a really embarrassing and humbling thing.
What was the breakdown?
I don't know. I never saw the breakdown. I just got the call that I was auditioning.
From the publisher?
My agent still sold I got a second book deal for the audiobook, and then she was like, she warned me. She's like, I'm so sorry. You're going to have to audition.
Yeah, and how long is the audiobook?
How long is it?
Yes.
To listen to?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's
endless.
6 hours?
Probably
4 hours.
6 hours, yeah. This is a 264 page book.
That's if you're one of those commuting people.
Do you know how many words it is?
Yeah, it's 80,000. Oh, it's 256 page book. It's 80,000 words.
80,000 words, Margot. That's huge.
Yeah, and my next book's only 50,000. I'm really jazzed
about
that.
I'll bet that's a 7-hour audiobook.
Right. I don't know.
100,000 of those words are khaki, by the way.
Let me tell you, my special thanks is really long because I was short, and anybody had ever passed me on the street, I was like, thank you.
You're kidding.
Thank you. No, this acknowledgments, I would have had five names here. This is four pages of
thank
yous.
And you're saying that's because the
publisher
wanted
a longer book?
Wait, I want
to see the very last person you acknowledges.
Wait, you're saying that's because
I actually like the last thing I say.
What is the last thing?
The very last sentence of the acknowledgment.
It's, I like what I say.
I hope you are a nicer person now, because it would be impossible for you to have gotten much worse.
I like that as well.
I thank my main bully from high school.
And so the second book that's going to be coming out, long story short,
yeah.
What's that about?
Storytelling. So it's not a memoir at all. It's a how-to guide to storytelling.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's nonfiction.
Yes.
Oh, that's
as
wonderful.
As was this, but it's a different type.
Can you give us some tips?
Sure. First of all, keep your story true. Do you understand how many people don't, like, they want to fabricate the ending? Did they think
that's
more
exactly
interesting?
No, that's exactly what Christine was saying about our, you know, shotgun story worthy is like people want.
Yeah.
It's like, they're like, I don't, you know, people are afraid. They'll say, well, we spin the wheel. I don't know what to say. It's like, just say the first thing you're thinking about. And if you don't take the time to fabricate something, then you can probably tell us in about a minute.
Right, exactly.
Whatever, you know.
It'll be interesting.
What is, you know, the first, you
it's
know.
It's enough.
You know, Drunk Tank, what's the first image that comes to your head? That's the story you should tell. And it needs to be true.
Yeah, that's something that's really crazy. And people will not have an ending, and then they'll fabricate something magical that's too perfect for anyone to believe. And then the audience will hate them. And it's just, I
and
don't
know. And they'll know.
Oh,
without knowing.
Know.
The audience doesn't know what they know, but they know when you're lying. It's like with stand-up. Because with stand-up, I think I will say you have to be – you can be factually false, but you have to be emotionally true.
Yeah,
it
that's
has
great.
To be the – and if you don't tell the truth when you're doing stand-up comedy, the audience will not relate
we
to it.
Right
and it can
it.
Be a version of the truth. It can be a little massaged. You can leave things out, but you can't add in things that had nothing to do with. Mostly it's leaving things out, I think.
Yeah.
And people do that because they feel that they're not interesting enough. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's a fear.
Okay.
But you are interesting enough.
And so?
So here's the thing is that to counter that, I'd say you are interesting enough. You're numb to your own life experiences because it's your life, so you don't think it's interesting. But in reality, if you actually start talking to other people about it, we will find it interesting. Like, people ask me, I have a 2-year-old son, and people ask me a lot about him. And I don't think it's that interesting or unique to have a child. It's not the craziest thing in the world, and many people do it. But what makes anything I say about him interesting is, and I believe this for anything, is that your perspective on it is what makes a story interesting. So you can take an everyday occurrence And if your perspective on it is unique and your point of view on it is unique, it can be great. So if you care about what you're talking about, if you feel passionate about it, and if you have a unique perspective, then think about all of those things that you feel that way towards, and then you do have interesting stories, even if you have a very basic everyday life.
I think people with children are very interesting because they're going through this period where, you know, it's just overwhelming, especially when you have a baby, one, two, three. Mm-hmm. I mean, your world, everything is affected.
Yeah.
So it is quite interesting to see where people are coming from.
Yeah. But so it's that. So it's like, what do you care about? And what do you feel strongly about? And those are the stories that you tell. So if you feel really strongly about how, you went on vacation and you snuck alcohol
right. in a Listerine bottle.
If you feel really strongly about I love cruise ships, right? And I think that they're cheesy, but I love them. I feel strongly about it. It's not that interesting to go on a cruise, but the point is that I feel strongly about it. And my point of view about it makes
you
it interesting.
You on a cruise ship is damn funny, Margo.
But that's what I'm saying is your perspective on it.
Right.
So it's not, then you think about that and what do I have a unique perspective on? And if it's the woman that becomes a mom at 45, that is a unique perspective. It's not parenting that's unique. It's starting parenting at 45 that is.
I love that.
So you start to think about it that way. And it's like stop getting numb to your own life and stop thinking that you're not interesting. Flip the switch and realize, like, if I care about it, it's interesting. If my perspective's unique on it, it's interesting. And people will care. Believe me, people will care.
And give me another storytelling tip.
I think that I get really lost when I hear people tell stories and there's a million characters and they have names like Sam, Bob, and Chris. I can't keep it straight. Yeah. So what I do is I'll nickname the people like with a characteristic of them or maybe a public figure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've got young Ronald Reagan and Afro and aging hippie. Do you know what I mean?
Then you can sort of... I love that.
Yeah, and I instantly was able to... I could see all those people in my head.
Exactly.
And so tell me about some of your favorite places to perform.
In the country?
Yeah, because, well, storytelling is such a new... Not a new thing by any means, but, I mean, it's just taking the country by fire. It's like the stand-up comedy of the 80s.
I agree.
And so there's new venues for storytelling because it's not stand-up, because the audience isn't involved, but they are involved. So there's like a push-pull. Is it better to be in a theater or on a stand-up stage?
Oh, I don't like telling stories in a stand-up show.
Mm-hmm.
And I also
by what you mean, not the venue, but this everybody in the show is telling stand up, and then you're
it's
doing
jarring.
Story.
It's
well,
jarring.
Yeah.
It makes it. Yeah, people get confused. Remember, people are not that bright.
No, yeah,
as
it's
audiences.
It's like when it's the same thing as when you're at a party and there's a band playing. And they say, now we're going to have stand up comedy. It's really just weird. It
doesn't make any sense.
And people always want to book that, and it's like it doesn't make sense. So I think I don't like doing it. I mean, in New York City. There were some, when I lived there, there were some storytelling shows that were done at mainstream stand-up venues. And it always felt, I don't know, and you can make it work, but it always feels a little bit odd. I do prefer a theater space or an alternative space. But I don't mind doing it on an improv stage. I think that that's pretty conducive, and those audiences are pretty conducive to storytelling. But I think something that is in an environment that is normally stand-up, like a club, comedy club, I think sometimes people are a little bit confused. Yeah.
Do you ever go back to New Jersey?
Yeah, sometimes.
Who's there?
My parents.
Oh, no kidding.
And my brother.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
So your brother kind of stuck close to home.
Yeah, he was in New York and now he's in New Jersey. Yeah.
It seems like, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh. It seems like most of the family kind of sticks close to the... Most people, it seems, pretty much stay within 20 miles of where they grew up.
Right, yeah, it's
not
normal.
Not that many people move out. So you were the one that left.
Yeah, and it was. I would have left earlier if my family wasn't there. I mean, I really didn't like New York City. I'm sorry. But
yeah,
I didn't
no
like
kidding.
Diane
Wait
was shitting on my street.
You didn't like New Jersey. What a controversial
New York City.
That is controversial.
Well, I always wanted to live in New York City as a kid, and I realize now that I want to live in a Woody Allen movie. I didn't want to live in the reality of New York City that I had no idea.
Let me tell you,
if you're not a millionaire,
reality is Diane is shitting on your block.
Yeah,
on the Upper West Side in a nice neighborhood. She's shitting on your block.
And you can't get a new couch because how do you get it upstairs?
How do you get it upstairs? And how do you get rid of your old one?
Yeah.
You can't even...
And your place is tiny. Yeah, years ago, I've told this before. It's like with an old girlfriend, it's like 20 years ago, we went to stay at a friend of hers apartment. This is a guy who, he wasn't there. He was the entertainment reporter for the Fox Morning News in New York. That's a pretty good job.
Right.
Shittiest apartment you've ever seen.
Is that right?
Horrible, ugly, not even like... It was tiny, but not like tiny, like, well, this was built in the 30s and Herbert Hoover lived here. It's like, no, this was built in the 70s. it's ugly.
And it's falling apart.
And it's tiny. Yeah. And it's falling apart. And it's like, I have a friend who says the reason New York City is always packed till 4 a.m. is no one can stand to stay in their fucking apartment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the streets are teeming with people because they're like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody's in a coffee shop. Everybody's at a pizza joint.
There's a romance about New York, but at the end of the day, there's something about California, the light.
Well, at the end of the day, there's something about New Jersey. There's something about you.
I would rather live in New Jersey.
You live in New Jersey. You live in a house in a street.
Wow.
Oh, we talk about it all the time. My husband and I were like, if we had to go back east for work, we wouldn't live in New York City again. We would actually live in New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, if you live in Trump Tower,
he's from upstate New York.
Okay, so he's a New York guy too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to play Shotgun Story Worthy, but real quick, how's your son then?
He's good. He's turning two next week.
And would you call it the terrible twos? Do you think that's going to be part of it?
He had the terrible, like, one and a halves. Those were like really.
When did he start walking?
14 months.
Does he wear a ribbon around his neck?
No. But he started punching us in the face and scratching us.
Oh, my
and,
gosh.
Like when he didn't get his way around 18 months, and he doesn't do that anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
So, and pulling our hair and stuff like that. So that's over. So now I feel like this is a
little
easier.
Did you spray him with a water bottle like a cat?
What's his language like? Does he have
great.
Some,
like really, really, really vocal. Talks a lot. Like kind of in sentences now. So
it's adorable.
So it's good because he can talk.
Yeah. And he's eating regular foods. I mean, kind of out of the baby food, as it were.
Yeah, he's eating regular food. Yeah.
I remember being so surprised at how few choices there were in baby food.
Yeah.
Until it occurred to me that the reason why there's so few choices in baby food is because that's only like a 2 or 3 month
period.
Yeah,
it's very brief.
That kids eat baby food, and you go right to eating regular food.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
But I liked the baby food because I didn't have
to. Hamburgers and french fries, all American things. Take your kid to McDonald's.
Yeah, but I liked how in baby food you just throw a jar at them and they eat it. Now I have to like cook something.
Yeah.
I liked that.
And now you have to convince them not only to eat that, but you have to convince them to eat.
Yeah.
Because I've seen.
Not my kid.
I've seen Christine's daughter be like, I don't want to. It's like, just eat something.
Oh, I don't have that problem yet.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Oh, it's great. It's great fun being a parent. And boy, it sure adds to your storytelling, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm working on it. It's a new thing to try to incorporate that stuff into stories. I'm still, because I mean, I also believe in perspective on a situation. You have to have, you know, comedy equals tragedy plus time. Not that he's a tragedy, but the point is that it's been such a new thing that I haven't had that much, been able to look back on it too much and make the stories worthy. Yeah.
I had a hard time the first 3 years my daughter was born. Not a hard time being a mom, but a hard time on my perspective of everybody else in the world and their children and the families. Like, I felt like I was postpartum for about 4 fucking years.
Hmm.
I mean, I felt really vulnerable and emotional for quite a while after my daughter was born. And I knew she was the only child I was having, and it was, there's just this whole thing. Plus, well, I was an older mom, so it's just this whole life is passing, and then my, you know, it's just, it's very grand is what it is. Having a child is grand. I'm lucky to have
operatic.
Uncle Hannes in my life. Uncle Hannes is
Uncle
terrific.
Hannes, that's right. I walk
she
in.
She loves you so much, Hannes.
That's right, because I know The Simpsons.
That's right. She really, at the end of the day for my daughter, as long as she watches two Simpsons a day, she's good.
Wow. I work at Universal Theme Park, and I work with The Simpsons.
Oh, wow.
So she thinks I work with The Simpsons every day. So I told her that, okay, this is a secret, people. We're going to add Sideshow Bob as
she's
a character in the park.
She's freaking out about that.
And she looked right at me, and she goes, I'm going to have to watch him.
She's
right.
Excited because they're going to open a Krusty Burger, right?
They're going to have a Krusty Burger. They're going to have a Moe's Tavern. There's going to be a Luigi's Pizza.
It's all happening.
It's all happening, people.
All right. Hey, listen, you want to play some Shotgun Story with you?
Yeah.
It can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
All right, my subject is fish. Oh, boy. I mean, I don't even know. Like, my son pronounced fish as sheesh for up until, like, last week, and it made me really sad that he stopped. He's been really into sheesh for a while, and so I went to the pet store, and I got him 2 goldfish, and I was like, I'm going to rock this. You know, like, my kid likes fish. So, and basically what happened was my son's 2 obsessions, I would say, are fish and buses. And so I got him these two goldfish, and I named them Archie and Blanca because one was kind of reddish and one was more white. And they were unhappy from the start that I had to buy them a filter, even though goldfish don't really need a filter. They were always gasping for air. And then while he was napping one day, I changed their water, and they came up. And then I came back out, and I had killed Archie and Blanca. And then my son woke up, and it was like this moment, and like he would always wake up and then run right to the fishbowl. And so wakes up and he goes, sheesh, sheesh. And I was like, ugh. And I go, Archie, and your fish are not here anymore. They had an accident. And he looks at me and he goes, bus? And I just said, yes, the fish had a bus accident. And he went, oh. And then he kind of accepted that. That's what
see, look at that. That's yeah. You're a pro, man.
See, and that's why you just say the first thing and start talking.
Yeah.
And you had an ending. You didn't even know you had an ending.
No, listen, that's really funny because when my daughter turned two, I got her an aquarium because she was so into fish.
Yeah, they're into fish.
I know, but now she's seven and we still have the goddamn aquarium and it's so much work. I mean,
is it?
It's fine.
Hang on. I don't call it an aquarium. I call it a water graveyard. How many fish have died in that aquarium?
72. I mean, I just buy fish and then I kill fish. And then I buy fish and then I kill fish.
All right,
fish.
So you get numb to it. I still feel bad. You I can get, still see
well,
them.
Well, you did kill them, though.
I killed them. I killed them.
I'm deliberately trying to.
I killed them.
And blamed it on the poor bus company.
And I think goldfish do need air. They need to have air.
They
aeration.
Did. Okay, well, then we got rid of it and then we got a betta fish and it's been great.
Oh, yeah, but they're alone, right? That's a solo fish.
Solo fish, no filter. She's very happy and she's been alive for months.
They're called fighting fish. Beta
yeah,
fighting
she's
fish.
She's beautiful.
Is it in a tiny little tank?
Well, she's in the same. I'm using that same bowl.
So
I got my
enough.
Money's worth at that bowl.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah, like I do still like these. Like, well, what could have killed him? The only other word I know, bus. Like to see you. Yeah, it's like when your dog goes, huh? And you're like, oh, he understands me. It's like he just said the only other word he knows.
Kids
and you
best.
Made the idea that like bus is accident. Yeah, it's like he was out of clues. If you said no, he'd be like. Well, I'm just going to shit myself now. I got nothing to, I got no more to contribute to the conversation.
Margo Lightman, you're such a talent.
Thank
and
you.
You're such a bright light, really.
Thank you so much.
If you go out and see her, folks, you'll immediately be inspired.
Oh,
and you're going to
you.
Laugh and you're going to smile. And I want to leave you with one thing, Margo. You have to see Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage.
I do.
Wicker Man is a remake of a movie from 1973. They
By the way, you should see the original, too, because the original is... actually quite good.
But in 2006, they come back with it, and it's just...
Oh, no, remake with Nicolas Cage, and that's where it went.
That by the end of the movie, they're all in bear suits. There.
Ooh,
they're in bear suits. Nicolas Cage has his head in a cage full of bees.
No, they put him up in the Wicker Man. It's like a Burning Man situation, and they
well, that's
put
after
him
the
where,
bees.
Where the heart would be of the... Like the big Burning Man... It's not called a statue. What's it called?
Effigy.
An effigy. And they kill him. Anyway, it's fabulous. So that I'm going to give that to you right there.
By the way, three people in the whole country are going to care about this. The original Wicker Man, the star, Edward Woodward. Edward Woodward, the star of the original Equalizer, currently remade with Denzel Washington.
See, there you go.
Three people. I am
always
full of useless information.
And your new book, Long Story Short, is coming out in 2015. That's going to be really successful.
I think so.
To be the person, people are into storytelling now.
Yeah, and there's no guidebook.
There's no guidebook. This is so topical.
So it's going to hopefully be like the save the cat for storytelling or the truth in comedy for storytelling. And it could, I mean, I'm really, really excited about to be the person that writes this.
No doubt
it was a really
about
quick,
it.
Much quicker sale.
You're going to be
than
the Del
first
Close
one.
Of...
Hopefully.
Yeah, this is fabulous. Yeah,
so it was a really quick sale, which was an indication of, and there was a couple bids on it too, so it's an indication of, you know, the market of it. Whereas my first book, I was like, somebody buy this.
Yeah, this
and I was
exciting.
Thrilled that I got it, but I mean, this is
now, wait,
really
on
great.
On the second one, did you get it as part of your contract that you are guaranteed to do the audiobook?
No.
See, I wonder if that's possible.
Welcome to my life. No, yeah. I'll be auditioning again. Okay. Don't you worry. not much has changed.
Well, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it.
I just don't believe you.
And I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, especially Heather Cooney out there. And Maria Spertolozzi. And of course, you.
Oh, it's only been like 3 months. You finally got her name right.
I got her name
Did you
right.
Get her name
How
right?
about that?
I'd also I just like call to her thank, Ball Girl.
I'd also like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy who wrote the theme song, Follow Me, Hannes.
I don't believe that. I believe he wrote it, but we auditioned somebody else to sing it.
I'd also like to thank our storyteller tonight, Margo Lightman. Thank you again.
Thank you.
As in leitmotif.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy of you. Can.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.